The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Carbon tax, we're going to be discussing now, because it became one of the main bones of contention during the fuel protest 2 weeks ago when the government agreed to pause the increase in carbon tax that was due to take place on the 1st of May. But how much does the government make from carbon tax, rather, and how is it spent? Padraig Tobin, leader of ANCU and TD for Mead West, asked the government this very question and found that 61% of carbon tax revenues, or 578 million between, this is 2020 and 2023, was not spent on climate action schemes. And Padder joins us now. Now, Padder, one of the arguments that is always used to push back a bit against any criticism of the carbon tax, of which many people do fire criticism at it, is that it is ring-fenced for carbon, for climate issues, including things like retrofitting. You're saying that's not the case.
Yeah, so the two major points that the government make is, one, to achieve a price which forces people away from carbon fuel and into renewable fuel. And our argument has always been, first of all, the market has already done that. Anybody who can get out of carbon fuel is trying to get out of carbon fuel. The second point the government is saying, is, as you say, is that it's ring-fenced for carbon objectives. So, you know, to help farmers, you know, reduce their emissions, to help families deep retrofit their homes, or maybe put solar panels on their houses, etc. And what we're seeing from the facts is that right now, 39% of the carbon taxes collected are not actually going to carbon objectives at all. They're either going to social welfare payments, which may not be heat related at all, or they're just going back into the exchequer. So, you know, that's very significant. That's a big chunk of money. And, you know, the government might say, well, sure, we're collecting taxes anyway. Isn't that good for the general delivery of public services? But the argument that we would have is that carbon tax is ignorant of ability to pay. And if you're going to collect money for general taxation, you should do it on the ability to pay. In other words, in income taxes, which recognises that some families, you know, don't have a margin to spare in terms of money, while other families do. And actually, the whole protests that happened over the last 10 days were simply about the fact that the fuel was being taxed at such a rate that it was unaffordable to people. It was a staple. People had no alternative, and the government are taxing it to such a level that people couldn't afford it. And as a result, people's businesses were going bust and people were suffering significantly. So I think the PQ that ANCU has received today, it puts a lie to the claim that actually all of this money is being repurposed for the benefit of people in terms of reducing carbon.
Okay, and I appreciate what you're saying, because I have sat opposite politicians who have told me it was all being ring-fenced, and clearly it isn't. But coming back to the fact that, let's just for ease saying, it's about two-thirds is going to these kind of climate action sort of projects and one-third isn't. There is a point about it going into the exchequer, and you kind of glossed over it saying, well, it doesn't really, you know, its ability to pay, etc. But the exchequer does things like gives, you know, fuel allowances to those on lowest incomes in order to make their life easier. So that would come from the same pot as maybe that carbon tax was feeding into. And indeed does things like retrofitting social housing and things like that. So though in terms of the social house spend, there is a benefit to the exchequer. And what I would ask you is if you say, well, we shouldn't be taking that third of the carbon tax and just throwing it into the general pot, what would you cut 250 million from our spend in order to give that back? Like what would you turn off the lights in half a hospital? Would you close down a couple of schools? Would you not build a road? Like there is an opportunity cost there. If we don't get that sort of quarter of a billion that we use on various projects that maybe aren't climate related, but they are presumably for the common good, what would you be cutting in order to give people back that carbon tax spend?
Well, first of all, as I would say, fundamentally, a principle of taxation should be ability to pay. And the idea that you would tax a staple good to a level where people can't afford it is wrong. Secondly,
yeah,
I would
but
say...
But Padder, you're ignoring the subsidies that exist for that staple. Because there are subsidies there. I'm not even talking about the energy credits. I'm talking about the fuel allowance. So that is subsidized for people on low income. So that kind of negates your argument to some extent.
No, like, I think it negates it for a portion of society. But you have a whole portion of society now...
But you're saying the ability to pay. So it negates it for those who are unable to pay.
No, because there's a whole section of society who are deemed too rich by the government for welfare supports, but are actually too poor to be able to heat their homes or to use the necessary energy. There's a squeezed middle in the section that fall off a welfare cliff and who have nothing there to support them, but still cannot afford the necessary energy that they need. And also, you asked, what would you do with, like, you have to have this money to be able to pay for elements within society. The €500 million that the government announced last week to give back to the citizens in relation to fuel supports is a third of the cost overrun of the National Children's Hospital. There is a massive margin of waste still occurring in this country in terms of money just being incinerated by this government on waste. And what the government is returning is only a fraction of that waste. So even building accountability into the system, making it efficient, making people do their jobs properly would actually equally, significantly be more than the money that the government is giving back to people in relation to this. And the third point I would say is, and this is fundamental, because your income tax recognizes the level that you earn. And, you know, it is a foundation of that income tax that the more you earn, the more you contribute to society. But the problem with purchase taxes like the carbon tax is that actually people on low incomes pay a far bigger chunk of their income on things like fuel
but here's
than
what
richer
you,
people.
You
so it actually hurts
there's
people
certain things
on
you criticise, Padder, and there are certain things you won't. So you're saying this 250,000-odd that is going to the Exchequer. It costs the Exchequer... The cost, to taxpayers of the farmers' protests, these people that you are speaking up in favour of, was €220,000 in legal fees and security fees and all that kind of stuff. So that was a cost. Are you going to criticise that kind of waste as well?
No, look, I honestly think that the reason why this particular protest spiralled is because of an intransigence in government and refusing to actually speak to those farmers. So at the very first day that particular protest happened, we cried out to the government, said, listen, just meet with them, speak with them. And if they did, they would have diffused that crisis completely in the first few days, and it would have never have risen to the same level that it did. It was simply because the government were pigheaded and they refused to negotiate and discuss with ordinary citizens. And this idea that ministers, whose authority comes from citizens...
And Padder, you're a very bright man, so I know that you do see that the government was somewhat over a barrel there, because we had people who were spokespeople for the protests during the protests saying, at the same time as them being spokespeople, that they had no control about whether or not people continued to protest at refineries or at ports, etc., that they were spokespeople but they had no control. So the government were on something of a hiding to nothing there as well, and you do know that.
Well, one of the reasons why some of the representatives diffused responsibility is because back in the beef protests, there was a danger that people would get injunctions or be sued individually if they had responsibility for an organisational action. And I think that's one of the reasons why those individuals diffused responsibility.
Okay, but if you have no responsibility, how can someone negotiate with you if you're not in charge?
No doubt, first of all, if I was a minister at that time, I would have brought these individuals, the four reps whose names were given, brought them into a room and said, listen, you guys, you need to get your structures, your side of the table in order, get a structure, get discipline, and make sure that you can deliver on any agreements that we make.
And then when people like the IFA and the Irish Hauliers Association say, we already represent people on this, and what you're basically talking about is de facto forming another representative body that is now maybe more radicalised than us, but we've already been negotiating. You know that there could have been fallout from that as well. I know you do.
But here's the deal, right? So the ministers get their authority from the citizens. And these same ministers then turned around and says, we're not going to talk to citizens. That is undemocratic. They have a moral responsibility to talk to citizens. Every single Friday, they sit in a clinic and they talk to citizens on a range of different issues, not on the basis that those citizens are organized or in a structured organization or representative, just simply because they are citizens. And that is enough for a minister to listen to citizens. And like, here's the deal. In the end, the government were pulled kicking and screaming and gave €500 million back in terms of tax relief, and they did it after the damage had been done. But initially, if they hadn't, they literally pulled down the shutters, refused to speak, and then threatened that the physical force of the army and the Gardaí would be used, and they did everything
that's a bit of hyperbole, because the army were only ever going to be deployed for moving heavy vehicles. They weren't going to be deployed as an agency of force against the citizenship.
In In retrospect, that may be the case. But, we had Jim O'Callaghan, and, Jim O'Callaghan very clearly did state, that they were going to bring in the army for the purposes of removing the protesters at the time. And he did it without even speaking to the Minister for Defence, Helen McEntee, which in itself is incredible.
We are aware of that.
We had a chaos.
But do you have any view, other than I suppose sympathy that you're expressing for the protesters, about the fact that we had, I think at one point, 700 to 800 of the petrol stations around the country had run dry, that we had a shortage of fuel for our emergency services, that we were hearing repeatedly for people from, say, around the Limerick area, that healthcare workers couldn't get to their hospital shift, that ambulances were not able to access the hard shoulder, that we had oil floating around that couldn't dock in our ports because there was nowhere to unload it to, and that our critical infrastructure was under significant pressure. And at one stage we heard that we were 2 days away from empty shelves in general shops for foodstuffs, etc. There is an argument that there are ways to protest that are absolutely appropriate and they are disruptive and all of that, but that they don't bring the country to their knees and perhaps put at risk things like our food supply and indeed people's right to access healthcare.
So the blockages were not our strategy, but they were the reality. And in that reality, an elected rep's first instinct is, how do I solve this? So we actually started to work with the protesters and negotiate with them to actually do the things that you actually mentioned there. So on the Saturday of the protests, we were actually negotiating with the protesters and the Gardaí to see could we get oil out of Whitegate. On the day where we had the big protest outside the Dáil, instead of a tractorcade coming into Dublin, we negotiated with the protesters to try and bring that down to a feet on the street protest, that it wouldn't actually block traffic at all.
No, and I accept that this wasn't just... Can I ask you, because I know Sinn Féin have refused to do so, threats being made against Gardaí and social media people trying to work out which guard was which and where they lived and all that kind of stuff that we saw during that. Do you condemn that intimidation of our guard?
There is no excuse for threats against the Gardaí. And I actually think there's no excuse for violence or threats against Gardaí in any situation ever in this country. It's absolutely wrong to do that. But
I'm glad to hear you say that. I have a last question for you, Patrick, because back to the carbon tax. If the carbon tax, the ring-fenced portion, about roughly two-thirds, 61% versus 39%, that 39%, that over a quarter of a billion euros that did go into the exchequer, what would you cut in order to give that back to the people? That's the last question for you.
Well, first of all, you could do this by simply allowing for taxation rates on an annual basis to be index-linked. So if you wanted to, make that amount of money still come into the exchequer and not hurt people at the lowest incomes, you could allow for the tax rates to follow the income, the income inflation on an annual basis. And that actually
are
would
you
bring
saying
it
put
around.
Up, put up tax rates for some people? Is that what you're saying?
No,
just to be clear.
Our policy is very simple, to cut waste within government. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to do it another way in terms of
tax,
you could. Well,
on
not actually raise the leave the bands float with the income levels. And if you do that, it takes in an extra billion on an annual basis simply by doing that. But the key here is we have 10 billion euros in a rainy day fund saved from last year. This year, we're going to save 8.5 billion euros in a rainy day fund. Much of those actions carried out with that carbon income could be spent by those rainy day funds. It's capital infrastructure.
So you're saying it's raining now.
It was raining on the people who were protesting last week. All there's right. No doubt about it.
Look, thank you for joining us, Padder. I appreciate it. That is Padder Tobin, their leader of AIM2 and TD for Meath West.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.